This week's guest popped onto my radar, and I knew I had to have her on the show. Liz Whitman is the founder of Exponent Beauty, and this is a skincare company that's doing things differently. Let me explain. Liz was the president and CMO of the Red Door by Elizabeth Arden Spa, and she noticed something that estheticians would do when they gave facials. They were mixing their products right there on site before putting them on the client's skin, making sure that all those good active ingredients in the products stayed fresh and therefore made their client's skin look that much better. See, that's the problem with beauty products with active ingredients. How long are they actually good for? What happens when you open and close them daily, letting all of that air into the products and oxidizing them? Well, with Exponent Beauty, you don't have to worry about any of that. They make a vitamin C, they make a retinol, they make a CoQ10, which is another antioxidant, a green tea resveratrol. But the bottom line with all of these products is that you're mixing them fresh right before putting them on your skin. It's kind of like a fun science experiment that you do every morning on your vanity, but really it's actually pretty simple. You mix a small dose of powder with a hyaluronic acid base. It is so simple, and I've been testing the vitamin C line for about a month now, and I can tell you this gives glow like no other product. So much so, people are asking me on Instagram what I'm using on my skin. It's been this. Liz has really mastered the art of protecting those active ingredients when it comes to skincare, which essentially makes that investment you put into paying for the product all that more worthwhile. I can't wait for you to hear this conversation with Liz. We talk about how to read labels and see what products actually have research behind them, how long products last for, the 12 active skincare ingredients, her favorite in-office procedures, how to read studies that companies release, and more. So much more. I can't wait for you to get educated on skincare with me and find out how to put all those hard-earned dollars to good use when it comes to buying your beauty products. Enjoy this interview with Liz Whitman. Hey guys, welcome back. I have a fun, lighthearted, beauty-obsessed episode for you today. You know we love to bring on founders and people who are disrupting that industry because I like to have a little sort of moment of relaxation from all the crazy stuff happening in the world. And today's guest is a true innovator in the beauty space. So from the consumer perspective, I've been testing products from this line. You know I don't talk about anything unless I use it and love it. And today's guest is here to talk all about the innovation behind her line. I have the founder of Exponent Beauty, Liz Whitman. Liz, thank you for joining me today.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here.
I keep saying your skin is glowing. Like it's, guys, if you could see this video, and you might see it if I get around to uploading this to YouTube, it's like, it's glass skin, I guess is what it is. It's just, it's clear, it's glowing, it's giving like Barbie smooth skin in the best way possible. I'm jealous,
Liz. Thank you. Oh my gosh. Well, thank you. That's super flattering. We like to call it the Expo Glow. And I'm sure we'll get into that in a second.
So are you loyal only to your products? I wasn't going to do your top shelf moment until the end, but let's just get right in because Exponent Beauty, as I said in the intro, you guys are disrupting the industry in a way that we're sort of keeping the active ingredients as fresh as possible, right? But I would imagine that even though you're a founder and you're doing great things in the space, you're probably tempted to try other stuff, right?
Oh, absolutely. I'm testing products all the time. And actually, that was part of the founding experience as well. Definitely looking at what was out there. But in terms of what I use day to day now, Exponent actually produces a line of anti-aging serums. So it's not going to fully fill out your routine. Mm-hmm. So I use cleansers and I use moisturizers and masks. And I do, my team makes fun of me. I call them flights, testing flights, for each of like those liquor steps in my routine. Yeah, exactly. To find the one that I like the most. So Exponent is my first layer on clean skin, but then I use other great products as well.
Yeah. Okay. That's interesting. Just as a quick question before we dive into Exponent, do you have a dedicated length of time that you'd like to give a product to test, see if it's efficacious?
Yeah. Great question. So anything that's going to have sort of high performance anti-aging capabilities should really be tested in a 2 to 4 week period, depending on the product.
Okay.
From a cleanser standpoint, you can sort of tell within a couple of uses, whether it's drying out your skin, whether it's effectively cleansing your skin. And then other sort of more non-daily products like masks or under eye treatments, etc., I try to give sort of 3 to 4 goes.
Okay. Okay. That's interesting. Yeah, I will stay loyal to something. I try to give it like 2 or 3 months, but that's good to know that clinically we should be seeing some effects earlier than that.
Yes. And we'll get into like the lifetime use of a product. Probably it's actually shorter than you think it is. But yes, 2 to 3 months, I hear that a lot. I don't think that's unusual, but I do think it's longer than you need.
Yeah, okay, good to know. All right, so Xponent, what I like, and guys, I did a reel on this, I encourage you to check it out, but what we're doing essentially is like mixing our own freshly activated products in our bathroom. Liz, can you tell us about the concept behind sort of separating the dry ingredients from the wet ingredients and why this is such a big part of the efficacy of this line?
Yep, absolutely. So it's a dirty skincare secret that the active ingredients in your skincare, and by active ingredients, I mean the good for you, beneficial, often anti-aging ingredients, often antioxidants like vitamin C and retinol, are super fragile. And so they degrade rapidly once exposed to air and light. And so if you've ever, you know, been to a spa treatment, you may have notice that estheticians mix a lot of treatments and masks fresh before applying them to guests. The reason they do that is to preserve the potency of that active ingredient. So essentially, once it's mixed with water, that starts kicking off that degradation kind of timeline. So if that's true, then how effective can pre-mixed retail skincare products be? Your serum dropper bottle, which is obviously already mixed with liquid and water. And so our line, Xponent, is really here to solve that problem. We're the first skincare line that fully protects active ingredients, so you're getting peak potency in every dose. And as you alluded to, the way we do that is we powderize the active ingredient so that the consumer actually activates it in the moment with a hydrator. So combining a powder and a hydrator to turn into a serum that you apply right then and there.
Yeah, I've been testing the vitamin C, and my complaint on typical vitamin C products is that I can have a really great first use of something, and then frequently it becomes irritating relatively quickly. And I don't have sensitive skin per se. And this is just the glide of it when I add the hyaluronic serum, you know, the wet part of the product is so, it's cosmetically elegant. Like, it's not sticky in any way, which is another vitamin C issue. Yes, it's amazing. And I don't have the irritation. So what are you doing particularly in that product to take away that potential for irritation? Because that did stand out to me, and I've tested a lot.
Yeah. And I hear that all the time, right? As people use the vitamin C product or vitamin C products over time, they can be potentially irritating. What I also hear is that people notice in their, you know, generic vitamin C products that over time the color starts to darken, or it starts to actually have the scent. It's affectionately called hot dog water.
Yes. Oh my God. Yes.
So that smell and that color change are actually the visible indications of this degradation issue that I'm talking about. From our perspective, our line, vitamin C is one of our sort of 5 serums, has been clinically tested on folks with sensitive skin, so proven to have great results without irritating. How do we do that? We essentially buffer the vitamin C with that hyaluronic acid, since you're combining the vitamin C powder and the hyaluronic acid in the moment. And then, of course, we're also delivering the freshest vitamin C each time, so nothing has degraded within that formula.
It scares me to think of how long I have been using certain products that probably have expired, like on my top shelf, because Liz, this stuff is expensive. And the last thing that I want to do is be trashing it. I know it's hard to say because each product is different, but let's just focus on vitamin C since we're on that ingredient right now. Typically, what is the shelf life of a pre-blended vitamin C product?
Yep, absolutely. So actually, even before I started formulating and thinking about incubating Xponent, step one on my journey was actually just trying to size this problem overall. I'm sure we'll get into my background, but I've been in the industry a long, long time. And so I had sort of heard ripplings of this degradation issue, and I'm a naturally curious person. So kind of wanted to see what was going on. And so what I did was I bought the top selling clinical skincare products on the market, products you have absolutely heard of, might have tried, hopefully not in your medicine cabinet right now.
Wink, wink.
And I sent them to a lab to test the concentration of the active on day one through day 60. Headline is that they lose almost half their concentration, their potency, in a mere 6 to 8 weeks. So I would say 6 to 8 weeks would be the useful life of a product. Now, let's be clear that useful life is different to expiration date. Expiration date I define as the moment the product could start actually growing bacteria and be unsafe for you. What I'm talking about is the useful life, like the life in which I'm going to get great benefit from my products, and that is really 6 to 8 weeks. Now, whether you're spending $200 on a vitamin C product, $20 on a vitamin C product, the average consumer uses a 1 ounce serum dropper bottle for, you know, 4 to 5 months. Okay. So that kind of gives you a sense of where we are on that kind of curve in usage.
So tell me specifically about retinols then, which is another, you know, class of active ingredient. And obviously we're using our vitamin C mostly during the day. We love the antioxidant power. It boosts the power of SPF, et cetera. A lot of people like to use a retinol at night. Can you give us a working timeline for the efficacy of those premixed products? And then we can talk too about that particular product in your line and how it differs.
Yeah, absolutely. So I love that you are such an expert that vitamin C should be used during the day. You are absolutely right. It'll supercharge your SPF. And conversely, retinol should be used at night because it makes you very sensitive to light. And so in regards to your question, what's interesting is vitamin C is a water-loving molecule. Retinol is an oil-loving molecule. So what does that mean? Vitamin C is going to be most sensitive to oxygen. So once it's mixed with water, it will start to oxidize. Retinol is actually most sensitive to UV light. It kind of makes sense, right? This ingredient is sensitive to light. When you apply this ingredient, it makes you sensitive to light. That's why we tell you to use it at night, right? So each one of these active ingredients have their own fragility issues. What I will tell you is that retinol is even more fragile and unstable than vitamin C. Controlling light is obviously a lot harder to control than oxygen in the air, right? And so that degradation curve is actually a little bit faster. Let's call that 4 to 6 weeks.
Okay. So I do want to get into your background because I explained a little bit in the intro here, but I think what's important for people to understand is that it doesn't seem like your goal was to add another product to the hundreds of lines that are already out there, but rather to add another product option that approaches things in a different way. So let's get into your background a little bit. And if you could sort of specify the holes in the market or the problems that you were seeing that motivated you to do what you're doing.
Sure, absolutely. So I've been in the beauty industry pretty much my whole career. So you can think of me as kind of an industry insider. Most recently, I was the president of The Red Door by Elizabeth Arden, so largest national salon and spa retailer, great heritage aesthetics brand. I got to Red Door actually after it acquired my last startup, which was called Manicube. Manicube was a B2B to C beauty services company, so going into corporate offices to offer working women and men 15-minute manicures and hairstyling services. Sold that business actually to The Red Door. So that's kind of how I went from entrepreneurial journey to large corporate and ended up staying at Red Door, honestly, for longer than I expected. They kept giving me more and more to do. It was really flattering. Anyway, it was there that I had the aha moment that would eventually lead to the founding of Exponent. So picture this, I'm at our Fifth Avenue flagship location in an oversized terry cloth robe that nobody looks good in. Getting a facial from our star esthetician, Nina. And Nina was, you know, walking me through our products and our protocols to kind of get me up to speed in my new role. And she spent a lot of time talking about why estheticians mix these active ingredients fresh in the moment before applying them to guests. Of course, the reason being that they degrade rapidly once exposed to air and light. So that really was that kind of moment of, oh, if that's true, let me question what's happening with these retail skincare products. And that's what led me down the path of saying, okay, I actually want to just test what's out there and understand how big a problem is this really. Mm-hmm. To your point, it was not, oh, I want to go start a skincare brand. The world does not need another skincare brand. There are a million skincare brands out there. And I'm sure we'll get into that and how to sort of navigate it, because I have some tips in general outside of Exponent. It was just, I want to know what's going on with these retail products. And it turned out that the degradation problem was big enough, that order of magnitude is big enough, that I decided I would like to try to solve it. And so that ended up kicking off a 3-year R&D journey to create Exponent and to create sort of our innovative approach. So, you know, when I think about innovation and what Exponent stands for, we're really about taking tried and true ingredients in skincare. And I happen to believe that there are 12 tried and true ingredients. So we can get into that in a second. Not the newest nut from the rainforest that hasn't been tested. We're not sure what kind of benefit it has. So tried and true ingredients at meaningful concentrations with clinically proven results. And so those are sort of the three values that we place in all of our formulas. And we are really just the skincare company that innovates on delivery mechanisms and form factors to make sure these ingredients are as effective as possible.
Okay, let's run through those 12 active ingredients. And you touched on something that I think a lot of consumers sort of experience, which is like this exposure to advertising, which is, hey, we just discovered this or this or this. And it's really compelling, right, from the purchasing perspective to be like, oh, this has got to be the miracle thing right here. So knowing that this research is like sort of clinically supported, what are those 12 ingredients? Even if people wanted to just start dipping their toe into active ingredients that they could kind of look for as they're shopping.
Yeah, absolutely. And so first, why don't I just, because there's so little definition in our industry, I'm big into defining things. So why are these 12 ingredients the tried and true ingredients in my mind? Because they have been around for long enough that they have been tested multiple times in clinical settings. So either tested at the ingredient level or proven and tested in a formula. So names that you're going to recognize because they have been around, right? So first you have your group of antioxidants, and that's primarily the area that Exponent is playing in today. You'll see where we go in the future. So that would be vitamin C, which in its pure form is called L-ascorbic acid. That would be retinol. That would be resveratrol. That would be green tea. And that would be coenzyme Q10, also known as CoQ10, or sometimes known as ubiquinone. So those are your antioxidants, and antioxidants fight free radicals. And that's, of course, what makes them very fragile. And once exposed to air and light, they start to degrade. Then there is a group of ingredients that I think of more with their kind of emollient qualities and collagen stimulating properties. So those would be like your peptides, your ceramides, niacinamide to a degree, great ingredients, not fragile. So you don't have to worry about those degrading. Those are actually very stable types of compounds and molecules. And so those will typically help with hydration and collagen turnover. And then there's a few others that I would mention, like salicylic acid and alpha hydroxy acids, the acid family as well. And so for any listeners who are curious about just like a quick cheat sheet on the 12, you know, kind of legit list, you can come to exponentbeauty.com, check out a tab called The Standard. Mm-hmm. The Standard is really our sort of public education module. We have a ton of interesting research and data published there. We also happen to have a product recommendation list of products that actually meet our standard for efficacy. Mm-hmm. These are non-Exponent products. We researched 500 products on the market and 82 met our standard.
I love that you're giving credit where credit is due. I mean, I would imagine in the competitive world of beauty retail, it could feel tempting to be like, everything else sucks. But you're like, no, these are other ingredients you can check out. We don't cover the whole gamut. Try these. I love that.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, I think broadly, as I've been on this journey, I would say like my kind of like guiding star has like started with oh, I wanted to solve this problem that I figured out, right? Mm-hmm. And then as you started peeling back the layers, you realized, oh my God, there's a lot of misleading claims. There's a lot of consumer, confusion. And so I wanted to create ways to kind of help people shop better and be more informed. And then as it kind of continued on, it sort of morphed into kind of a broader industry view, which in my opinion is, I would love to be part of the discourse that eventually leads to some sort of standardization of what is effective skincare, what is clinical skincare. So I think we're living in an era right now where so many of the certifications in the industry stand for the absence of things. Free of this, free of that, right? And I'm much more interested. I am interested in what things are free of for sure. And actually our formulas are very, very clean. But to me, that's half the equation.
Right.
It's kind of like table stakes, and I think it should be. And I think I hope it will become that way, right? And so if that's half the equation, I'm also more interested in what our products are full of. What are they full of that's beneficial? And do they have enough in there to actually be beneficial? And why don't we have certifications that kind of stand for that? So check out the Exponent Standard. That's kind of our framework for how we evaluate products. I'm not saying it's the end framework that people should use, but it's very simple. And we talk a lot about why we've chosen that framework. And you can apply that to other products on the market.
Can you also talk a little bit about the difference between perception studies and clinical studies? I mean, if I hadn't been haven't been obsessed with this industry for a dozen years, I probably, from as a result of my own skin problems, I probably would never have nerded out enough to like know all these intricacies. But sometimes I worry people are picking up product and they're like, oh, 98% of people say they're, I'm like, this is worthless. So talk about consumer perception versus clinical studies and how we can get through the marketing mumbo jumbo to like actual science.
I'm so happy you are asking me this question. This is a huge pet peeve of mine and like a huge passion point. So there's clinical testing and consumer perception testing. Clinical testing is done with measured instrumentation. So subjects go into a lab, they are tested with a Physio machine or a Canfield machine. These are machines that use UV rays of light to essentially do kind of heat mapping of the skin at the top three layers of the dermis. Then they are given a product to use over a certain period of time, and they come back in, get measured again. And so why is that important? That means I can actually measure the depth of a fine line or a wrinkle, both before and after you've used a product. And then I can tell you to what degree it actually improved the depth of that wrinkle. So you're going to get an actual measured improvement. So let's say a 12% reduction in fine lines and wrinkles. Consumer perception studies are subjective, whereas clinical testing is objective, measured instrumentation, right? So consumer perception is, hey, you're a subject in a study. I'm going to send you a product. I want you to use it for a certain period of time. And then I want you to fill out this survey. And the survey is worded typically as to what degree do you agree with the following statement on a scale of 1 to 5. The appearance of fine lines and wrinkles were reduced. To what degree do I agree, right? And then I will say 3 or 4 or whatever it is. That's going to spit out a stat that says 93% of consumers agree or saw that fine lines and wrinkles were reduced. And so we actually do have a cheat sheet on our site, if you'd like to come and visit exponentbeauty.com, on how to actually navigate what is a clinical testing claim versus a consumer perception claim. It's very nuanced. It's very specific marketing language to really kind of figure out the difference. But if I can arm you with that, then you will be able to kind of cut through the clutter as you look at these as these products and their claims. What I will tell you is clinical testing is much more expensive. It's almost 5 times more expensive than consumer perception testing. And so that's why a lot of brands don't do it. I think what's more shocking is, as I mentioned, we had researched 500 brands, 500 very high performance, sort of, I'm going to be super beneficial claimed brands, less than 20%. So less than 1 in 5 had done clinical testing on their products.
Wow. That's crazy. I mean, that means we're all suckers too. I mean, we're just, as a customer, we're just like, make my skin better. And we're like literally willing to pay any price for it.
Yeah, well, I think it's really sad, honestly, because I think if you're playing in the category where you're claiming that you're going to have demonstrable changes to the skin, you really should prove that that's the case. And so I'm really hopeful that as consumers become more and more educated on how to kind of, you know, suss out the difference between these two types of testing, that we'll start demanding better standards. And once we start demanding better standards and voting with our dollars on that front, brands will be forced to have to do that.
I love that. As you were running through that list, Liz, of the 12 active ingredients, and I will link to that in show notes, I am thinking of over the course of the past, I don't know, 10, 15 years, how my skin has reacted to those. And I specifically have had a real issue with retinol. I haven't used retinol in probably, I used to swear by it, recommend it. I hit 40 and my skin is like, nope, we're good with AHAs. We're good with vitamin C and like maybe like I just, but nothing active anymore. Put your science hat on and explain why that might be the case. I'm not asking you to like be my doctor, but can you just help me understand? Because I hear other women, especially at a certain age, saying the same thing. And you know, you go through the whole period of letting your skin adjust and still it's just like ripping my skin apart. I don't know what's going on.
Got it. So are you, can you walk me through kind of what type of retinol you were using, or were you using an RX, a prescription retinol?
Over the counter, but it was, I don't want to say a brand, but it was in like, you know, the crinkly tube, the metal tube. They were the low, maybe a 0.5 concentration to start. And it's still like, what I was noticing specifically was that this underlying redness. And it was, I didn't have the, you know, the purge that a lot of people say where you break out and a lot of things. I didn't have that, but it was almost like a sensitivity to the point where my skin was just like, no thanks. So is it, could that be a formulation issue?
Yeah. So I will make some hypotheses, obviously, without knowing the exact
problem. I will not hold you legally responsible for anything here. Yes, you have my word.
But you know, what you're experiencing, again, very common, and I hear it all the time, which is retinol can be very sensitizing. So it can cause redness, it can cause sloughing and dryness, and almost eczema level kind of skin patches and other things. We absolutely know that in the zeitgeist, people talk about building up a tolerance to retinol, skin cycling, purging, etc. That's typically going to happen when you're dealing with a retinoid. Well, retinoid is the prescription level, I should be clear. Retinol is your over-the-counter, second level sort of version of a retinoid. It converts into retinoic acid over time. That's going to be a type of retinol that has not been pre-buffered or is at too high a concentration or that has lost some potency or changed over time. So it could be one of those three things. And I do feel like we are living in, particularly in the US, in an environment where we believe that like more is better. And so there's been this arms race on concentration. So here's just like a quick kind of cheat sheet. If you were to go and get prescribed tretinoin, which is usually the kind of generic RX version of retinol from a dermatologist, the starting concentration they would put you on is typically 0.025%. So that is a prescription retinol. Over-the-counter retinol is worth like 1/10 of a retinoid. So that would be equivalent to a 0.25% that you would buy off the shelf somewhere. So the fact that you're on 0.5, like that's not actually low. I mean, it sounds low. Like
it does sound low. I was like, oh,
grand scheme of things, but yeah. So 0.25, again, equivalent to the starting concentration of an RX. And then you should be looking at the other ingredients that are in that product. So is it buffered with vitamin E? Is it buffered with allantoin? Is it buffered with hyaluronic acid? And so by managing kind of around that, you can start to minimize the need to obviously build up tolerance, but also the sensitizing effects. For us, our retinol is 0.25% in every dose. So it's equivalent to your starting RX concentration. It is buffered with vitamin E and allantoin. And then of course you activate your retinol active powder with our quadruple hyaluronic acid hydrator. And so of course that adds a buffering agent as well. As I mentioned, we did clinical testing on all of our formulas. Again, that's the measured instrumentation version. And for our retinol flight, we actually screened for subjects specifically with sensitive skin. Mm-hmm. They were able to tolerate our retinol every night. They had never used retinol before. They did not need to build up a tolerance over time. And so in addition to no irritation, also saw great benefit in reducing fine lines and wrinkles and retexturizing the skin. I have had folks who have literally written in and said, I have rosacea prone skin, so like the highest sensitivity possible, and I am obsessed with your retinol. So we feel like it's extremely gentle but still effective. And that's, of course, the optimal concentration that we pick for each one of our products is always the percentage that we believe will bring the highest benefit without irritation.
I love that. Okay, so I was probably using the strong stuff. Didn't even realize.
It might have been strong, and it might have just been like not mixed with the right ingredients. Like you right. don't want to put pure retinol on your face, and that's why I asked if it was a prescription retinol, because a prescription is a single ingredient, right? And so that's going to be the rawest kind of single ingredient experience, and that's when I typically hear about the most redness and the most flakiness.
Can you run us through why you decided to include other ingredients or in your activated serum specifically, why you choose, I guess, to feature? You had, of course, in addition to the retinol and vitamin C, the CoQ10, you have a green tea resveratrol, you have like a probiotic enzyme for acne. Mm-hmm. How did you land on these specific actives?
Yeah, absolutely. So first of all, obviously the line is targeting antioxidants, right? Because we're fixing this degradation issue. So we were looking at the family of antioxidants. We wanted to pick the best antioxidants that would give us a broad range of products for skin types, right? And for, you know, benefits and concerns. So our vitamin C product, so first of all, any antioxidant is going to help with fine lines and wrinkles. The difference between each one of our products is that they'll have an additional benefit on top of that. So our vitamin C will help with fine lines and wrinkles, but will also have a brightening effect. Our retinol, again, it's an anti-aging line, fine lines and wrinkles, but will also have a texturizing or retexturizing smoothing effect for the skin. CoQ10, this is an awesome ingredient. It's becoming more popular in supplements right now, and I'm so excited to see that. It's an incredible antioxidant. It's not found as often in skincare in the US. It is found frequently in Japanese skincare, actually, which is some of the best in class clinical skincare. The reason it hasn't made its way as deeply to the United States is once it's mixed with water, it takes on a little bit of a toxic orange color that we as consumers, I guess, just don't like the aesthetics of. So ours is powderized, so we can kind of get around that. It's called our firming filter, CoQ10. And so that will help with fine lines and wrinkles, but will also have a tightening and a firming effect. So great for kind of sagging skin, aging skin across the board. Our resveratrol and green tea is our product specifically for sensitive skin types. So resveratrol and green tea are antioxidants, so helps with fine lines and wrinkles, but they're also anti-inflammatory, so they'll bring down redness. I often hear sensitive skin types say, I'm nervous about getting into actives, you know, I have rosacea prone skin, et cetera. And so this is an incredible product for folks like that. And then our enzymes and our probiotics will bust blemishes, will declog pores, reduce blackheads. And so again, whether you have acne prone skin or if you're like me, where actually my skin runs drier and sometimes I get blackheads just from clogged pores of, you know, dry skin, it will have a clearing effect.
Ooh, I need that. I got these craters on the side of my cheek. Everyone's like the T-zone. It's not my T-zone. It's like my, I don't know.
Right O-zone. There. Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I'm like getting ready to go out and I'm like popping things. And my husband is like, what are you doing? I'm
what
like,
are you doing?
I know. I need to just completely divest of my magnifying mirror. It's like the best and the worst thing. I just sit there.
It's tough. I know. It's oddly satisfying, but yes.
The best. What other, especially because you have a background in a spa and sort of, you know, services setting, what facials, lasers, in-office procedures do you also like?
Yeah, microdermabrasion is sort of my go-to, technology treatment, I should say, in a spa setting. I think it gives just a really nice cell turnover, but it's still extremely gentle. I've done LED lights. I've done oxygen as well. I think those do have great benefit. I think they're just like, they don't last as long. And so, you know, depending again on where you're looking to have your treatment, and obviously pricing and price sensitivity, I would say skip those and stick with microderm if you have that choice. Exponent, actually, when we originally came out with our pro line. So we actually work with med spas and dermatologist offices. We partner with them with our pro line, and we are included in a lot of back bar treatments in addition to sold in retail. And so that's been really fun for me just to go back to my roots and spend time with, you know, professionals and kind of hear what they're up to. I'm also a big fan, you can probably tell I'm a fan of non-invasive things. I do a glycolic peel about 3 times a year at a dermatologist's office. So why at a dermatologist's office? Because it's going to be that higher concentration and administered by them. And I swear by that. I feel like, you know, the results last, you know, a couple months, and certainly for any sort of sunspots and other things. Mm-hmm. It's a great, great thing. But you do have to do it regularly. It's not like a one and done. So that's right. A commitment.
Yeah, you're on the West Coast. I'm in Florida. These like recurring brown spots, especially around my mouth, because I'm like, I do SPF, but I'm always like wiping my mouth. And I just like it's like a muzzle of freckles. I'm like, oh God. Mm-hmm. What SPF do you like, Liz?
So I use the Elta MD 46 SPF. I'm sure you've heard of it. Every dermatologist I've ever worked with, both in the past and now, recommends this product. It's a no frills SPF. You can buy it on Amazon. Now they have a clear one and they have a tinted one. Mm-hmm. And all I will say is, oddly enough, the tinted one, like this is just sort of an interesting formulation thing. Tinted one is pretty universal. Like I'm pretty impressed that it can work. So my best friend is of Greek heritage. She's got dark olive skin. I'm very, very white and pale, and it works on both of us. And I find that to be pretty incredible just from like a color cosmetics kind of component.
Yeah, that's hard to master. I tend to stay in the mineral world for SPFs, like mm-hmm. just zinc oxide typically is the active ingredient, just for sensitivity reasons. But even like it's just really hard to nail that. Would you guys ever get into the SPF space?
I would love to do that. I think there is a huge like overhaul happening in SPF right mm-hmm. now, which I'm a huge fan of, and obviously sort of following from slightly afield. And I think the science is going to continue to evolve in really interesting ways, particularly in the next sort of 3 to 4 years. As I'm sure you know, historically, a lot of the innovation on SPF has come out of Australia. Mm-hmm. Makes sense, ozone layer, you know, where there's a need, there's some innovation. And so I'm super excited to kind of keep following it and figure out where we might slot in. As I mentioned, you know, our whole thing is just making sure that we're innovating on form factors and delivery mechanisms to actually make these ingredients shine in the most effective way. So it would really come down to, is there something that we can actually supercharge and make even better?
Mm-hmm. Okay, good to know. What about new products that aren't SPF? Anything that you are sharing at the moment that you guys are working on? Or are you going to kind of stay put for now?
Yep. So remember, we talked about the 12 tried and true ingredients. Obviously, this first anti-aging serum line is focused on making antioxidants as potent as possible. Besides antioxidants, we talked about some of the collagen-inducing ingredients that are totally stable, like peptides and ceramides and squalane, et cetera, that are stable, right? So what are the issue with these ingredients? These ingredients tend to be large molecular format. What does that mean? That means when you apply them, they tend to sit on the surface of the skin versus penetrating through the top 2 to 3 layers of the dermis. Mm-hmm. If you could get them to penetrate a little bit deeper, you could get definitely a lot more efficacy out of them. And so that's the family of ingredients we'll be targeting next. And we are working with a pharmaceutical company to do so.
I love that. I can't wait. It's like a timeline available. Like when should
early next year. Here's the other thing about clinical testing that we didn't talk about. It's 5 times more expensive and it also takes a lot of time, and we will not bring a product to market without having tested a product.
I love that. What else do you do, Liz, that's outside of just treating the outside? What are some practices that you have maybe for relaxation or for disconnecting? Because I would imagine you're phone is going off all hours of the night with work-related stuff. So how do you unplug and take care of yourself?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I guess, okay, so if I think about physical, mental, emotional realms, physical realm, I'm very much into exercise. I listened to one of your more recent podcasts. It sounds like you just got into weightlifting. I did too. I just turned 40, so I was like, I need to be building muscle. And I don't want to be losing it over time. And so I've been doing weightlifting twice a week. Historically, I've been a runner. At this point, I'm trying to run 1 to 2 times a week. I'm just want to be careful with my joints, etc. So I've like pulled back a little bit on that. I find that actually leads into kind of the mental realm. It calms me down. It gives me clarity. Mm-hmm. So even more than, you know, a physical need, it sort of covers both. So it's really important to me. And then my ritual that brings me sort of like groundedness every day is walking my cute little dog. We happen to live across the street from a park, which I feel so fortunate about. So I get to take her there. She loves to play fetch, and just like the joy with which she plays fetch, and you just see it. Like she's small. She's 9 pounds, so she bounds through the grass almost like a rabbit.
It's like adorable.
And every time we go, it's like she's never done this before. It's like the first time, right? And I don't listen to music. I don't listen to podcasts. I put my AirPods away. Mm-hmm. I'm quiet. My phone's in my pocket, and I just watch her. Mm-hmm. And I'm with her, and it's not long. It's like 10 minutes, 15 minutes. And so I love folks who meditate and have that kind of practice in their lives. I haven't been able to get myself into it. Quieting my mind is difficult. Just putting my feet on grass and watching this joy like for 10 to 15 minutes a day.
That's the best tip, Liz. That's what I do walking Romeo. Sometimes I pull my earplugs out AirPods out, and I just walk. I hear nature. Mm-hmm. I hear other conversations people are having walking. It is it's presence alone. Even like you said, for 3 or 4 minutes, I'll do this. Then I'll listen to the podcast or whatever, but it is so restorative. It's so weirdly restorative, and it's so simple.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, it feels like self-care as a term, obviously, like it has encompassed so many different practices at this point. And so that can sometimes feel really overwhelming to kind of get started. And so I think for me, at least, always just emphasizing that these small moments are totally like snackable, doable things. Mm-hmm. And self-care, it shouldn't be hard, you know, like it shouldn't be. It sounds so soft, but it is actually really hard to like do a million things. So just whittling it down to one thing that brings you some kind of joy.
I love that. As we wrap up, Liz, I want to give some advice to people who are entrepreneurial in spirit out there. Obviously, you have accomplished a lot. And there are people out there, whether they're in your industry or a different industry, who want to make a difference. And anyone who's tried to start their own thing knows the road is slow and the road is long and filled with obstacles. And I always like to ask people who have started their own thing, what kept them going and what advice you might have for someone who's on a similar path.
Yeah. I guess if I had to boil it down to 2 things to kind of keep in mind, I have a million, I could write like a whole book about it, but like, let me just try to focus. In terms of advice on whether or not somebody should devote themselves to, you know, something for a long period of time, people come to me and say, oh, I have this idea. What do you think? Right. And I always say, you should feel like the problem you're trying to solve is big enough that your solution is a painkiller and not a vitamin.
If that makes tell sense. Me more. I love it.
Yeah. So like the problem has to be important enough to your audience and your potential consumers, that your solution is something they can't live without, as opposed to a nice to have. And I know we're on a wellness podcast, so like you might say vitamins are necessity. I don't know, but you know, just versus painkillers, right? Like we got to take the pain out, as opposed to, you know. And I think that's a good way to just gut check, mm-hmm, if the problem solution sort of equation is impactful enough. And why is that important? It's important for 2 reasons. 1, it probably means it'll be a much more successful business. But 2, it means that you can then attach yourself to the importance of what you are providing. to your consumer. And that's going to become really important because that goes into my second point, entrepreneurship. I don't know, it, like everyone sort of touts it as so glamorous. And the reality is it's definitely not. It's extremely hard work. And yeah, there are moments of just incredible joy and excitement and enthusiasm. But if you don't have a really solid reason for yourself as to why you are doing it, it can be extremely taxing on your mental, emotional, and physical health, right? And so point one leads into point two in the sense of if this, the solution is impactful enough, then you can find some reason to be around those hard times because you know you're doing something that is really, really important, at least to whatever your audience is.
Yeah, that's so true because it's really easy to lose hope because no one really has a straight shot to success. So you do have to remain inspired. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, Liz, thank you for spending time with me. It's just like scratches my beauty itch to just get into all these nerdy topics. And I just love empowering people with a little more knowledge because shopping for self-care products is overwhelming. So thank you for taking the time with me.
Yes, absolutely. And I, you know, I share your frustration. Obviously, no surprise being in this industry for as long as I have. People ask me all the time, like, should I buy this? Should I buy that? I think I get so many text messages a week from friends with like ingredient lists and other things. And it's just, it's overwhelming. There's so many products out there. As we talked about, some of the claims can be sort of worded in kind of not an intentionally misleading way, but a confusing way. And so I just want, look, if Exponent is for you, great. That makes me so happy. If it's not, and I can at least just educate you on how to make better decisions within this category, or if I can streamline and simplify your decision-making, right? So that you don't have to be an investigatory journalist on every single topic. That also makes me extremely happy.
I love it. Well, you guys are doing amazing work. I highly recommend the products from the line that I tried have been amazing. So guys, if you're curious, please do check it out. I will link Exponent's website, but it's exponentbeauty.com. And we'll pop a bunch of helpful tips in show notes as well for everybody to check out. Liz, thank you again.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to this latest episode of We Gotta Talk. If you don't mind, I would love if you could leave a rating and review. Those help this show to get out to people who might find it useful or entertaining. I'm so grateful for your support. Please follow on Instagram at Sunny Abada or check out our latest blog post at wegottatalk.com/blog. See you next time.